This is EAA Radio, and I'm Digital Dave, and on the phone with me is Mr. Lance Geiger, otherwise known as the History Guy. How you doing today, Lance?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Great. It's always great to have you. I could talk your ears off. Anyway, what you got for us today? What kind of a story?
This is a very interesting story, but it's a story of what you can do if you're truly an aviation enthusiast, if you're someone who really loves to fly and doesn't necessarily have all the common sense that you...
Well, no, that never happens.
No, that never happens. It's about a guy who turns out apparently was a very good pilot, but didn't necessarily use those skills in a way that was the most productive. But it makes for an incredible story, and he did some incredible things for what he did. But his name was Patrick, or Tommy Fitz, and the way that he comes into history was on September 30th, 1956, he landed a small aircraft on a road in Manhattan.
What? In Manhattan?
In Manhattan. And taxied it up to a bar, got out of the airplane, and had a drink.
Okay. That's something I would
definitely
think of.
The first time that we hear his name.
Yeah, this had to be one of these, hey, y'all, watch this moments?
Sort of like that, yes. Thomas Fitzpatrick was a guy who was known to have a sense of humor, he was a big, husky, 6-foot-tall guy who was handsome. He had been a veteran. Matter of fact, he first learned to fly because he had served at the very end of the Second World War and had been trained to fly reconnaissance aircraft. But then he'd also served in Korea with a unit that supplied fuel, and his claim to fame was he was the first soldier from New York City to get the Purple Heart in the Korean conflict.
Wow. So
he'd been injured in Korea and come home. But he apparently was a very talented pilot, and he was what he did for his living is he was a steam fitter. He was a mechanic sort of guy, but he was also an airplane mechanic, and he had qualified as a pilot at a flight school in New Jersey. But he had grown up in Manhattan, so in 1956 he was back in Manhattan for a wedding. A friend was getting married, and he was in a bar that was his old stomping grounds. He was sitting in this bar, and he insisted to someone, they got into an argument over whether you could make it from New Jersey to Manhattan in 15 minutes.
Okay.
I don't think the person he was talking about, I think the person he was talking about was thinking that that would occur in a car.
Yeah, yeah.
So he drives back to New Jersey, and he goes to the flight school where he learned to fly. And according to him, according to his story, he asked permission to take an airplane and told him that he would pay, you know, he'd settle up with him in the morning. He takes off in this airplane. He flies to Manhattan in less than 15 minutes. He lands on the street next to the bar. He gets out, and he collects his winnings from the bet.
Okay. Meanwhile, outside, there's an airplane.
That's not legal.
Yeah, slightly. Imagine that.
The street was open because it was like 3 in the morning. So he managed not to kill anyone in the street. And he says that he actually originally wanted to land on the football field where he went to high school, but the lights weren't on. He couldn't see it. So he just landed on the avenue and rolled down the street and got out of the bar. And then he insisted to police that he had just been going on a flight that he had felt the urge to fly. And he was going on a legal flight that he'd had engine problems and was forced to land where he was.
Okay.
But the police, of course, didn't believe him. The police line was the fact that this story begins and ends at the same bar.
Yeah. Awfully
but
suspicious.
It was an amazing landing. They were amazed that it was a breathlessly perfect landing, is how it was described in the newspapers. And I mean, what a skilled pilot it would take to land right on a city street there, but he's doing that for the purpose of winning a bet and drinking another drink.
Right. Great event. Wrong reason.
Wrong reason. Yes.
I imagine he actually had to fly down between buildings and things.
He did, yeah, 6-story buildings, and he just managed to tuck in between them and not hit the power lines and set her right down perfectly.
Oh my! And then how did they get the airplane out of there?
They didn't fly it out. They actually took the wings off and shipped it back to New Jersey. And originally, the biggest crime involved was that they said he'd stolen the plane, but it turns out he talked them at the flight school into dropping that charge. And the judge took pity on him and thought that this was just, you know, some sort of lark. And the only thing that happened to him is he ended up with a $100 fine. That was essentially, the fine was for illegal parking.
Oh, wow. Now, if he'd only had slugged the meter before he went in.
Yeah, then maybe he would have avoided the $100 fine.
Oh, the problem is there's no windshield wiper to put the ticket under, huh? Oh, that's right.
That's the issue. And you would think it ends there. It makes the newspapers and everything. But
it doesn't end there.
2 years later, he's at the same bar, and apparently someone from Connecticut doesn't believe his story.
Okay.
And of course, he can't let that happen, so he drives to New Jersey. He takes another airplane from the same flight school and lands on a different street in New York City.
Well, one where he figured the parking was better?
I guess he was just, I just want to go someplace else. This time, he lands, it's again the middle of the night, and again, but it's even a narrower lane that he's landing on. And the first person that saw him was a bus driver, a city bus driver, and he hears this noise and looks up and hears a plane lands, almost hits the bus. And so he was saying, you know, how do I explain that if I have to go to a safety meeting and explain how I managed to collide with an airplane?
Yeah.
And then when the plane hit, it bounced. Another driver was pulling into the street right as he landed. So, of course, the plane, when it first bumps down, it bounces up, just bounces right over that guy's car and lands. And that guy sees someone get out of the airplane and run away and describes him as being a 6-foot-tall husky guy. So, of course, when the New York police hear that, they're like, huh, that seems to be a modus operandi.
Yeah.
For a 6-foot-tall. What an odd coincidence that a man that fits Tommy Fitzpatrick's description happened to land an airplane that looks just like the other one in New York City once again.
Right. And how many other suspects would they have had anyway?
Who else would you have guessed? I think eventually they would have tracked the plane back to him anyway. But he was given a more severe sentence the second time. And really two sentences. He was sentenced for stealing the plane this time. But he was also sentenced because his license had been suspended. He never made his license active again. So he was also given a sentence for flying with his license suspended.
Okay, what was the sentence?
6 months.
Oh, wow.
But he actually ended up serving 6 months and 2 weeks. Because the second sentence, they were scheduled to run concurrently, but he wasn't sentenced on the crime of flying with his license suspended until he had already served 2 weeks. And so he had to serve, to fill out that sentence, he had to serve an extra 2 weeks. So he served 6 months and 2 weeks, and then never again landed an airplane on the streets of New York City. And apparently lived a wonderful life as a steam fitter. And passed away with a large family and a beloved man whose biggest claim to fame was that he was the first soldier from New York to get a Purple Heart in the Korean conflict, and that he twice landed a Cessna on the streets of Manhattan.
Oh, my goodness. I wonder if any of his family kept the newspaper articles.
I would imagine that their walls are papered with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he was a good guy. He was just the sort of guy that would laugh a lot. So I don't know if he was embarrassed that he did that or if he was always proud of what he did that. But he did it.
Well, aside from the legal issues, from a pilot issue, it's incredible. He's just a great pilot.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, he said at his sentencing, he said it was just because I get drunk. It's the lousy drink. But yeah, from a piloting, both times, the police were just absolutely amazed because these seemed to be absolutely impossible landings that he just easily made while he was apparently not fully sober.
Yeah, that's even better. Yeah, okay. Because you're not supposed to fly drunk. It usually doesn't end well.
Yeah. You know, flying intoxicated is wrong. It doesn't end well. But he was apparently, of course, he never used it for, he was never a professional pilot or anything like that. But he apparently was still a rather amazing skilled pilot.
Yeah, he should have been a professional.
He should have been a professional. If he was a professional, he might have landed it in safer places.
Like airports?
Like airports, yeah. Rather than being known for the guy that was drunk landing planes on the island of Manhattan, yeah.
Yeah, really, that's not something we teach in our flight school. All right, that's an amazing story.
I'm sure he hadn't gotten instruction for it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's no syllabus for landing on New York City streets. Wow. I mean, I'm a student pilot, a perennial student pilot, and when you're coming into land, the runway always looks really, really small. So I imagine when he was coming into land, the street looked tiny and the buildings just looked huge.
Looked huge. huge. Yeah, and it's pitch black. He's just seeing the streetlights and the lights in the buildings, and he figures out where that is. It's much smaller than any landing strip, and still he managed to do it. So in some ways, he's truly an aeronautical hero. I mean, the guy was amazingly talented, and I'd love to go see his grave marker because he's certainly an extraordinary guy by any standard.
Yeah, really. I'd love to go see where he landed. I wonder what it looks like, anything like it did then. I mean, the street probably hasn't changed much.
Because, you know, it's just a paved street, yeah.
Right.
And how do you get the airplane back out of there? Yeah, they had to literally disassemble it to tow him out of there.
Yeah, pull the wings off, stick it on a truck, and bring it home. Again.
For the second time.
Yeah, right. You know, when the tow company got the call, oh, no, not him again.
Not again. We just did this 2 years ago.
Yeah, right.
If he was trying to hide his culpability, he maybe shouldn't have taken the plane from the same place.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's the only place he knew where he could find one at 3 a.m., I guess.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, not everybody can just find a Cessna sitting around and thinking, maybe he should have gotten his own, but then that, you know, they could attract that to him. So
yeah, that would have been.
There's no real way to do that and to get away with it.
No, there's no good way to do that at all. Unless, of course, you could prove it's an emergency and you had to land. But
that's true. Yeah, if he, you know, he might have been able to do that more cleverly if he wanted to. I don't think that's really what was first in mind.
Right. I mean, doesn't running out of beer constitute an emergency?
I guess it does. The guy didn't believe him. You can't have that.
That's right. We can't have that. These guys from Connecticut. What do they know? That's really funny. All right, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Again, Lance Geiger, the history guy on YouTube, correct?
On YouTube, an absolute my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, it's been great. You're listening to EAA Radio, and this is Digital Dave.